You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
I am elated because we get to continue our story of our friends in Australia, Lutherans in Australia, the church there, what's been happening with the church today. Well, last week we got to talk with President Anker of Lutheran Mission Australia. This week, today, we get to dig into a little more of the history of Lutherans in Australia. Mm-hmm. And the fun part is we get to talk with an Australian here in the States.
Yes.
At Concordia University, Wisconsin. What a fun circle this is.
Yes. Many connections.
And thanks to Concordia University, Wisconsin for supporting the Coffee Hour. You can find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin at cuw.edu.
Live uncommon.
And that just happens to be where we're going today. We're talking with the Reverend Thomas Peach. He's assistant professor of theology at Concordia University, Wisconsin. Pastor Peach, thanks so much for being our guest today.
It's a joy to be here. Thanks for that warm introduction.
We are delighted to have this time with you to learn more about the history of Lutherans in Australia. Before we get to that, tell us a little bit about what you get to do at Concordia University, Wisconsin every day.
Well, I'm only a few weeks into the job, so I'm enjoying it immensely. I teach a lot, and I'm teaching Bible, Christian faith, a survey of Christian thought. I'm really a pig in mud here, getting used to a different kind of climate from Australia here, both in terms of weather, but also in terms of colleges. We don't really have private Christian colleges in Australia. We have universities, which are sort of more public universities. And so I just love both tertiary education here, but also with a confessional underpinning and handing on the faith and meeting all sorts of young people in different phases of life and kind of modes of life that are unusual to me than Australian. But it's all the more fun for that. So I'm really enjoying the cut and thrust of classes and having students in my office to chat over things too. And I love teaching theology. Church history is sort of my main area, but I love teaching the scriptures and teaching systematics too. It's all a great privilege.
That sounds really wonderful. And we get to talk about history today, which we do love talking about history on the Coffee Hour. So let's talk about early Lutheran immigration to Australia. What prompted early Lutheran immigration to Australia and those missions at that time?
There are lots of different motivations for the early Lutherans coming. Some come from corners of Europe, almost more for just economic reasons. And there are some that intentionally come for missionary reasons. So they are sent as missionaries to come to Australia, especially to the indigenous populations of Australia. And we can talk about that later. There is, however, the main community of Lutherans that first arrive in Australia in 1838. Are kind of like Lutheran refugees. They're religious refugees. They came from the Prussian lands, and Prussia had been ruled by a Calvinist ruler, Frederick Wilhelm, and he had for some decades been putting pressure on the churches to adopt a language around Holy Communion that was qualifying the real presence of Christ. And a lot of Lutherans objected, but few held to the courage of their convictions. And those who did hold to the courage of their convictions found that they were quickly on the outer in Prussia. And so the first sort of Lutheran community come from this Prussian problem. They were called Old Lutherans because they held to their old beliefs, and they especially cherished the real presence of Christ in the sacrament. And this put them at odds with the Kingdom of Prussia. Their churches were locked. There were soldiers put on guard. They had to hold services in the woods or in people's houses in secret. And this became an untenable situation. They just wanted to use the old hymn books that they'd always been using. But they were no longer allowed to. The nature of the Prussian government was they had oversight even of the liturgy. And so they started searching around for a place that they could go. They realized this was untenable. They actually thought of Russia originally. That was on their cards. It fell through. They thought of the USA, and indeed some other groups of old Lutherans did make it to the USA from this same refugees from this same Prussian Union. But the ones here, the original Australians, they couldn't get it to USA. Their pastor was in Hamburg looking around for a place that they could go to, and he heard of this new colony, South Australia, and leapt at the opportunity he had. And so the first sort of larger group of Lutherans, there were a whole bunch of them who came, were a product of this failed attempt at Prussian union from the Prince Frederick Wilhelm. And so they come to Australia with kind of not a desire necessarily to evangelize Indigenous people, but seeking freedom, freedom for their families to be raised in the faith, to practice the Lutheran confessions, to practice the right worship of God too. And I've always found it really curious that really early on, these early Lutherans plant grapes and then plant wheat crops as well. To this day, it's sort of a bit of a backbone of a lot of Lutheran industry is making wine and sowing grain. And it just doesn't feel completely as if it's a coincidence that the sacrament, the very thing that they wanted to have freedom to celebrate, the real body, the real presence of Christ in the body and blood, in bread and wine, his body and blood, was what they also wanted to cherish when they get to Australia, and their spirit of independence leads them also to sow these grapes and wheat so that they can celebrate the holy presence of Christ.
So where do we go from there? These old Lutherans immigrate to South Australia. Where does it go from there? Do they build communities? Are there more missionaries? How does the Lutheran community, Lutheran presence, continue to grow in Australia?
Well, more old Lutherans come, but after a few years, the persecution in Prussia lifts. And so as time goes on, the people who come are often coming to Australia from that part of the world, perhaps more for economic or family reasons. They've got family who've already made it to Australia. They hear that a good thing's going on down there, maybe some prosperity, some freedom. And so they come and join them as well. So there's that kind of community of Lutherans that grows through migration, but less from maybe you would say push factors from Prussia, more from maybe pull factors within Australia. But there are a huge amount of Lutherans who are arriving from different corners of Europe as well at the same time. So the early Lutheran missionaries came from the Dresden Lutheran Mission Society. You get their missionaries arriving from other Lutheran mission societies in Germany and even in Switzerland as well, and also eventually Scandinavian Lutherans too. So it's a kind of bit of a melting pot of different motivations and different reasons why different Lutherans are arriving in Australia. And there are interesting stories about different mission endeavors that they would get into and get up to in Australia. Sometimes they would cooperate with each other and new synods would sometimes form as people would cooperate, but sometimes they operated quite independently of each other and were more answerable and responsive to their sending bodies back in Europe as well. And so the 19th century in Australian Lutheranism is full of different synods, different groupings, and loyalties that often extend more to Europe than necessarily to each other across confessional lines in Australia.
What were some of the challenges that the early Lutherans faced arriving in Australia? You mentioned planting grapes and wheat. What were some of the things that they had to deal with, the challenges and the things that they had to work together to overcome?
So there's lots, and there are physical ones. I mean, Australia can be a harsh place at times as well, and it was tough going. Some of the early Lutheran missionaries to Aboriginal people found this especially tough. Well, let me tell you one great story. Two great missionaries, Kempe and Schwartz, they arrive from Hermannsburg in Germany as missionaries to the Indigenous. They arrive in September 1875. Within a month, they've been sent to the center of Australia, a journey that very few people have taken. They haven't even had one summer in Australia yet. They're from northern Germany. It takes them 20 months to arrive in central Australia. They travel for 2,000 kilometers. It's incredibly harsh. And they were called over by local Australians who wanted to have some mission to the Indigenous people in the center. And they commit this heroic journey. It's interesting, actually, they come from the Hermannsburg Mission Society. I've mentioned the Dresden Mission Society. You have Neuendettelsau, another mission society that send pastors to the US as well, which forges some connections between Australia and the US. The mission societies often had slightly different flavors. And the missionaries, these ones, Kempe and Schwartz, come from Hermannsburg. It was the kind of mission society where you might have a class on house building. Where the kind of trades were emphasized alongside missionary work, because they were often being sent to places where you needed to be a bit of a manual laborer as well as an evangelist. And so Hermannsburg Mission Society had that real flavor. And lo and behold, they called the settlement in the center of Australia Hermannsburg after their seminary. And it remains Hermannsburg to this day in a really famous center of Australian Lutheran mission in among Indigenous people especially. So they faced immense physical challenges there. The other seminaries, another mission society was the Dresden one I've mentioned. They engaged in Aboriginal mission, and another challenge they faced was language. The Dresden mission societies tended not to have classes in house building, but you'd have classes in Latin and Greek and linguistics. And so they came out with more of an intellectual bent, and that served the mission really well too. So they were the missionaries that came from Dresden, especially the two early famous ones, their names are Sherman and Teichelman. They learnt the Indigenous language and tried not to teach necessarily English to the Indigenous so that they could understand them, but rather they themselves learnt the local Indigenous language, Kaurna, and began holding services in the local Indigenous tongue. They even wrote a dictionary of the Kaurna language. And it's a fascinating story in Australia that this is the language of the Indigenous people who live around the Adelaide region. And the language of Kaurna actually dropped out as the 19th century went on. Tribes spoke other languages or were wiped out. And in the last 50 years, there's been a revival of the Kaurna language. And they have one source book, and it's the dictionary of these two Lutheran missionaries, Sherman and Teichelman, who came with the linguistic skills that the Dresden Mission Society had equipped them with. And so they faced great language difficulties, but were really well equipped to do this. I've got another fun story about them. Sorry, just briefly. Often you were supported by mission societies overseas. Sometimes the Australian Lutherans would bandy together and try and give you a bit of money, but often it was back from home. Europe would send money to support them. Sherman and Teichelman were supported by a duke outside of Dresden, Altenburg, the Duke of Altenburg. And as a part of the deal, he loved specimens of birds and things like this. So they sent back on boats hundreds of specimens of Australian birds and insects. And to this day, there's a museum in the middle of Germany with 19th century specimens of birds and insects sent by these early Lutheran missionaries, kind of as a part of their support contract, you might like to say. And so there's all sorts of unusual challenges. Funding is always a challenge. Physical landscape, language. The other great challenge is these confessional boundaries. And the question of what does it actually mean to be a Lutheran kind of quickly arises. And you have people calling themselves Lutheran and meaning very different things by it according to the communities they grew up in Europe. And that soon comes to a head in many different places around Australia.
Mm. It's interesting hearing this history and knowing some of our history here in the United States, too, of Lutherans in the United States and the questions that come up with as they immigrate here. And what is a Lutheran? What is a church? Can you have a church if there isn't a pastor? All these questions that come up when you leave, when they leave their homeland and go to. I do have a question about what they found when they came from Germany to Australia. What was the terrain and the climate like? How was it different or similar to what they experienced at home when they came to Australia? It sounds like many of them came to South Australia first.
Yeah, so the largest communities were in South Australia initially, and the communities that went elsewhere, including in Queensland, came for often different reasons and more fewer at a time. But the larger communities first came to South Australia, Adelaide. They gravitated towards the places that matched their climate, I would say. So there's a place, the Adelaide Hills, which has a slightly more, there's a higher rainfall. The summers aren't quite so hot. And so you can see them gravitating to those sorts of places. They quickly, though, did buy land in the Barossa Valley, which remains to this day as one of the great wine-growing regions of the world, and a lot of Lutheran churches there still. But that was relatively hot, and they sometimes struggled to cope with the local climate and the local areas. There's one place in the Barossa Valley where a settlement was built against the advice of the local Aborigines, who said, this floods occasionally. And the Germans didn't listen, and the Aborigines were proved right. About 10 years later, the whole place was submerged in water. And so there were difficulties in getting used to the local conditions in some of these places. I mean, especially in Central Australia, though. And there are stories of missionaries who would give it a crack in there, but really couldn't stand it. Occasionally, even later on, you get a pastor's wife saying, I've had enough and needs to get back to Germany because it's just too much. But by and large, they do adapt. And a lot of the early Lutherans in Adelaide and South Australia would engage in the practice of market gardens. And so they would grow produce and sell it. They were very industrious. And as a rule, the British colonists loved them because they were hardworking. They kept to themselves to a certain degree. They spoke German. And so they had their own communities that often didn't need a lot of intervention from the colonists or from the British government. And that was good news for the colonists. So they tended to appreciate having them around.
We're learning about the history of Lutherans in Australia with the Reverend Thomas Peach. He's assistant professor of theology at Concordia University, Wisconsin. We'll continue to learn more in just a moment. You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
At Concordia University, Wisconsin, we believe you were created for a reason. To use your God-given gifts to help others. To live a life of self-sacrifice in a me-first world. To live a life that's uncommon. Whether you're taking one of 50-plus online programs or learning with us in person on the shores of Lake Michigan, you'll be equipped to make an uncommon impact. Learn more at cuw.edu. Concordia University, Wisconsin. Live uncommon.
Welcome back to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
We're learning about the history of Lutherans in Australia with the Reverend Thomas Peach. He's professor of theology, assistant professor of theology at Concordia University, Wisconsin. We've learned a lot about some of the Lutheran immigrants that came to Australia in the early years and where they settled, many in South Australia, but also other places as well. You mentioned some of the missionaries that came to Australia invested much time in learning the language of the local people rather than teaching them English or German, but exactly. Learning the language of the local people. Tell us more about missions with Indigenous people throughout history of Lutherans in Australia, what that's looked like.
Originally, the mission to Indigenous people came from incentives in Europe, that you had mission societies that were arising in the 19th century and people looking for places in the sort of expanding known world to sow the seed of the gospel, to be sent to support local people, to bring them the good news about the gospel of Jesus Christ. And as Australia as a colony was growing and growing in its worldwide kind of reputation as well, different mission societies would send people to come and evangelize the local people. People discovered that there were Indigenous people for the first time. This relationship was only forged in the late 18th century when Australia was sort of discovered officially. And then into the 19th century, people begin to come to Australia from Europe with this desire to evangelize local people. And indeed, a lot of mission societies around Europe sending money. However, sometimes that money would dry up. And mission to Indigenous people was often very difficult. There's one attempt was made at a town called Bethesda. It's in South Australia. But you've got to travel north up into the desert quite a way. And for something like 50 years, missionaries came to Bethesda, tried to evangelize the local people and really got nowhere. And it was one of these stories you sometimes get in 19th century and 20th century missions of not a lot of fruit coming from the mission and the donors back at home beginning to ask hard questions and say, perhaps we need to wrap things up here. And sometimes what's required is doggedness, and sometimes what's required is pulling out. And so that was one attempt at evangelizing large groups of Indigenous people that didn't succeed, in at least in worldly terms. But then the two chaps I mentioned earlier, Kempe and Schwartz, they travel this immense journey, 20 months. They've got a whole bunch of sheep, by the way, as well with them, and they need to kind of travel to water sources because it's so dry in the center of Australia. that they would get to a well and stay around there for a while, as they could then also replenish their stocks with water and get ready for the journey to the next well. It's why it took so long. But that mission at Hermannsburg, after a while, it begins to take off. And they have a way with the local indigenous population that is read about and studied to this day. They were very generous with them, even materially at times, that they would help them out. They would do education. But then on the other hand, they were relatively strong when it came to Aboriginal religious practices. So there were often a lot of what we might just consider broadly pagan rites that the Aboriginal people would engage in. And the missionaries were often quite strong in pointing out to the young and to the old that these things were demonic, and they wanted to have nothing to do with them. And so they would encourage them away from this. This is not very fashionable today to speak about. And yet these were people who had their hearts, their souls in their hearts, that they wanted to promote the gospel of Christ to the Aboriginal people's souls. They especially focused often on the young. And it's interesting that it was often the young who would come to the gospel, and then the young would sometimes evangelize their parents, who were often more set in traditional Aboriginal religious ways. And so one of the great Aboriginal evangelists is a guy called Blind Moses. This is in the center of Australia. He becomes blind in his 20s. And I think it's in his 20s. He's very young, at least. And he was a Christian in his teenage years. He was one of the first Aboriginal people to be baptized. I think he's in the second group. There's a group of a dozen, and then he's in the second group a year or two later. He lives to a very old age with no eyesight, really, or strongly decreasing eyesight. But with help, he would be led around to various Aboriginal tribes and groups, and he would bring the good news of Christ to them. He ended up, at the end of his life, telling his story to a missionary who wrote it down. And you can look it up online, Blind Moses, his story. It's a remarkable document because you get to hear from the voice of an Indigenous person, one of the first Indigenous Lutherans. And he lived his life as an evangelist, supporting the gospel. So the mission starts with Europeans. It then, though, had, after the European support dried up, that Hermannsburg mission was actually supported by Australian Lutherans. They were German immigrants or immigrants from Europe, but they were living in Australia, and they were the ones that now had to take over this impetus after the money from Europe dried up. And then on top of that, it was actually the Indigenous themselves that, once converted, started sharing the good news with each other. And it's a remarkable story that continues to bear fruit. And the center of Australia is still full of Lutherans. They're Lutherans that often don't speak English. They just speak their traditional Aboriginal tongue. And there's ongoing mission work and support of that today. It's called the Fink River Mission. And it's a remarkable story within Australian Lutheranism. So even to this day, I've been a lecturer at our seminary in Australia. And three times a year, you have what's called a bush camp. And Aboriginal pastors will travel up to 1,000 kilometers. What's that? 600, 700 miles. And you'll come and you'll have a camp for a week in the desert, in the middle of absolute nowhere. Maybe a small town there, maybe by a riverbed somewhere, always a dry riverbed. And you might have about 50 Lutheran pastors there speaking a bunch of different languages. And one of us from the seminary might go up and teach for a week, maybe on the scriptures, maybe on the Lutheran Reformation. You'll have translators there, maybe into two or three tongues, so the different Aboriginal language groups can understand. And you are cooked by the barbecue. You don't have any showers. There are snakes often, and all sorts of strange things to come your way. But they're deeply rich times. And I've done it a couple of times. And the strength of faith among Aboriginal Lutherans is deeply encouraging. These very traditional people who often won't take your word for it. They want to see where what you are saying is either in the Bible or the hymn book. That's the source of their strength, the Bible or the hymn book. And so I was encouraged in my teaching to consistently draw people's attention back to God's word in the scriptures and also the songs of the church in the hymn books, that this is what will have authority. And what a great witness to all of us as well, the Bible and the hymn book as the lifeblood of our faith.
Well, we clearly have plenty still to uncover
yes.
when it comes to the history of Lutherans in Australia, and I'm thoroughly intrigued.
Me too.
As I've totally lost track of time.
I love it.
Best
stories.
We will learn some more next week. We're going to talk with Professor Peach in just a week. We're going to talk
next
in just
week.
A week. Yes. We'll continue the conversation. This could be a 10-part series, but we'll try to be realistic. We'll be realistic here. He has other classes to teach at Concordia. Professor Peach, thank you so much for sharing this with us today. Looking forward to our next conversation.
Hey, you're welcome. I'm having a great time.
You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
The Coffee Hour with Andy and Sarah is a production of KFUO. To support The Coffee Hour and KFUO Radio, visit KFUO.org. You can also text KFUO to 41444 or send an email to gifts@KFUO.org. And you can call us at 800-844-0524. KFUO. Christ for you, anytime, anywhere.